What's up, Growth Nation? Welcome back to Scale or Die. I'm your host, Dave Rogan Moser, and this is the show where we uncover proven growth strategies from CEOs and growth experts behind some of the world's fastest growing startups. Today, I've got a friend of a couple years, Eric Sue. He runs an agency called Single Grain, which you may have heard of, maybe not, but they're powering a lot of the paid traffic, SEO, content campaigns for startups that you know and love, like Uber, Lyft, Salesforce, Lever, a bunch of other ones that we'll talk about here. Runs two really big podcasts. They combine, they get over 1 million downloads a month, which is huge. We're just getting into the podcast game, so we're gonna talk about that. And also, a year and a half ago, launched the new SaaS yourself called ClickTail.
ClickFlow.
Dang it!
You're close enough.
ClickFlow.
Yeah.
And we're gonna talk about that as you kind of taking everything that you've learned from helping other companies and like launching your own SaaS. So, Eric, thanks for being on the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Good to have you. So, you do all of these different things. Like in your own words, like what are you working on primarily right now? Like where's the time go?
Yeah, so honestly, I've done like a time audit, right? So 80% of my time does go towards the agency right now, but we are hiring a CEO, so that should free up my time. And then after that, I'm just going to focus on growing the SaaS company, which we just released a new version. I got to go all in on that because that's the thing that's actually powers the agency too. It's actually a side effect of having that SaaS company is it actually drives agency some multi-six-figure contracts, and some of these clients stay the longest. So it's much easier to start a conversation when you lead with a product versus saying, hey, come buy my agency services, because nobody really likes talking to agencies. I'm sorry. It's just how it is.
I don't really like it. Yeah. I like talking to you, but...
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that.
So you see them as being really synergetic. If the SaaS takes off, will you keep doing the agency?
I will keep it because I've had a lot of people on my podcast where you know they go from SaaS they go from agency to SaaS company, and I'm like, why do you need to throw away the agency? Because the agency is a great maximizer in the back end. You know, people talk about funnels all the time. Why can't you just keep the agency? You have a really good CEO that has agency experience run it. They can continue to grow it, and then you get to work with the best clients you want. And it's not like I'm in a day to day. Like I will continue to market. I will continue to drive leads. And I will continue to, you know, either buy products or, you know, grow products, and that's it.
Are you seeing that the companies that are using your software that are also agency clients stay longer and are happier?
They do, yeah, yeah. And OpenView Ventures or Partners, they're a venture firm in Boston, they talk about product-led growth all the time. And I'm just like, why aren't more companies doing this? Maybe it's because they've kind of capped themselves and boxed themselves into this agency persona, but I'm just like, why can't you do this? Why can't you do this, right? But the key thing here is like, you know, what you're kind of alluding to in the beginning is like, what are you spending your time on? You have to be able to focus because if you try to do too many things,
yep.
It's all going to grow slowly and that might take too long. You might die.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Or die. There you go.
Scale or die, baby. Mm-hmm. That's the name of the show. Okay. So I want to talk about what you're doing with the agency and kind of what's working there. I want to talk about the podcast and I want to talk about launching the new SaaS. So what companies have you worked with? In the agency, what are you doing for them? And then like, just generally, like, what are you seeing like is working for SaaS right now?
Yeah, so agency side, you mentioned a couple of clients. So the big ones would be like Uber, Amazon, and it's Amazon Alexa, which is their SaaS product, which is not their voice product, it's their SEO tool, which they bought. Most people don't know that. So we help them. What we've been finding, Lever, Recurly, Crunchbase, those are clients, right? They all drive, without going into too much details, but they try to drive people to an ebook to a download, and they try to get their sales team on it, right? I think that model, at least if I had control of their marketing team, I think it is a little flawed because like people are inundated with content. There's over 4 million blog posts being produced every single day. There's new podcasts all the time. By the way, this podcast is really good, so make sure you tell your friends about it. But the problem is like everyone's doing the same thing. How can you zag where other people are zigging, right? Oh. So like, why can't you just, for us at least, when we drive people to something, we drive them to a webinar or even a live video. Live videos work really well right now and it gets our engagement up. So our YouTube grows faster, our Instagram grows faster. Why can't you just do that and then retarget people to the video and then, you know, build goodwill that way, drive them to an offer, right? Because the lives, you can do it all day long. Or you can do a webinar, right? But the thing is webinars are becoming saturated themselves too.
Interesting. So you're still driving people always to some form of content, just maybe not the same kind of content that they're used to before. Something I've heard and we've seen tested out is driving people to our free trial. Like the free trial is the lead magnet. You know, it's a simple opt-in, give your email, you can actually use our software for a certain amount of time. Is that something that you've seen or played around with? And like, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, so we do that for clients too, right? And then you might see like a certain percentage, like it might be 5%, 10% or so will actually end up buying. Now, you know, the problem is the more expensive your product is, the more education it requires. Like if you're smaller, then that's fine, right? If you're going down market, completely fine. You can probably do that. But if it requires a lot of onboarding, a lot of education, it's probably not going to work that well. You probably need to have them request a demo. So it just depends on what kind of product you're doing. So for ClickFlow, we're going mid-market to enterprise, so it does require a lot of education.
Interesting. How are you guys driving traffic and like getting trials for ClickFlow or getting demos?
Yeah, so that one is strictly, we're doing outbound right now, or we're using my relationship. So it's kind of like trying to make it relatable for people. You know, when I think about it, I would still, if I was starting from scratch right now, I would do the live stuff that I'm talking about, because the advertising platforms, what are they incentivized to do? They want to keep you on their platform, right? So YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, doesn't matter who it is. They want you on the platform. So, you know, what works for us is it's taking a lot of time to build the podcast up, to build our SEO traffic up. It's all made everything way cheaper, right? Everything's become like our advertising costs. It's like, because we're retargeting people, because we have a large audience, because we can make these lookalikes, it's become easier for us.
When is a SaaS company ready to spend money on paid traffic? And when are they ready, or should they be like really trying to do SEO and start ranking there?
Good traffic. Good question. So I'll answer the first part. I might forget the second part. So first part is, you know, they always say, oh, you got to reach product market fit, right? But what does that mean exactly? So for me, it's getting actual, like when we see good engagement on the product, so we might be looking at Amplitude, whatever analytics tool you're using, and we're looking at people. For us, it's like looking at how many people are coming into the product, starting a test. That's, you know, our thing is engagement is people that run tests on our product and seeing if they, you know, what percent actually come back the next month. If it's over like a certain percentage, let's say 30, 40, 50% or so, and then we're actually doing that and it's repeating, then it's time to scale, right? Once you have a formula, then you're ready to scale, right? It's like an Excel formula. If it works, then you scale it. But if I see too many people saying, we're ready for paid ads when your product isn't even ready to go yet. So it's like, you gotta understand, there's a feeling, but also the numbers show that you're ready to scale.
Okay, so that's paid ads. And what kind of numbers are you looking for with paid ads? You have like a CAC to lifetime value formula you think about?
I mean, they always say like, you know, in the valley, it's like 3 to 4 to 1, but I would even be more conservative and say 5 to 6 to 1. And it's you know, maybe you want to do it on like net of, you know, all your costs, right? And then that way you're getting
gross profit.
Yeah, gross profit, instead of just saying, oh, it's like this gross number.
Yeah, that's kind of something we were doing. We were doing, you know, 1/3, but then I forgot about like the gross profit. So I'm like, man, really, like, we're not making a lot of money in here when you kind of calculate this. Plus, you're not calculating like the actual labor it took to drive that. So like all the marketing costs, I stepped back and I was like, I do think like 4 to 1, 5 to 1, especially because analytics are tough, right? Mm-hmm. It's like so hard to like get the exact right number. Yeah, 4 or 5 to 1 seems a lot safer.
Yeah, well, for me, it's like, I'd rather be safer because I tend like, this is why I like to charge more money, because it allows me to make more mistakes. So the same thing here too, right? You want to be a little more conservative so you can make more mistakes.
Totally. Okay, so that's paid traffic. What about SEO?
Yeah.
What about content? What should people be doing early on there?
I think a lot of SaaS companies, especially the ones that come to us, they see SEO as this like mythical unicorn. It's really not that hard, right? I'm oversimplifying it, but okay, what are you doing? You're basically creating content at the end of the day, okay? And people forget about links. It's the two things that matter the most with Google, right? It's content and links. At least in the United States, or anybody that uses Google, content and links. People will try content in the beginning. It's like, oh yeah, we're doing 800 words per blog post. We're doing it once a week. And then they give up. They give up after like 3 to 6 months. But you're comparing with other people, again, 4 million blog posts every single day. If you look at our blog, it's like every like 3 or 4 times a week, it's like 2,000 to 3,000 word posts, right? How are you gonna compete with that if you're not even matching them at that level? And if you wanna beat them, you gotta go even beyond that. And then you gotta think about links too. So I would say if you do have the resources, maybe 20% of your marketing budget goes towards SEO and content, with the understanding that it's not gonna give you a return for quite a while. Because when I first came into Single Grain, and you guys had Sujin on the podcast before too, founder of Single Grain, when I first came in 6 years ago, we were only getting 4,000 visits a month to our blog. Now we're approaching about 240,000.
Wow. Overall. How long ago was that?
That was 6 years ago,
okay.
But it just took a long time, right? And I can talk about the podcast stuff too, but it just takes a long time. And we were in an Uber on the way here, and it's just like, and I was like, Dave, it's not like, you know, we're amazing. And I like kept going.
On wood, keep pounding the pavement.
Keep sawing wood, I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then so what's the formula on SEO? So write good content, a couple times a week, ideally. Mm-hmm. Long form, you know, kind of 2,000 to 3,000 words, that's where you're kind of seeing. Is that working better than, you know, I feel like, a couple years ago, I heard everyone just like, you know, just get 500 word pieces out there.
Yeah.
You think long's better?
Well, I mean, for sure, because if you look at Demand Media and some of these companies like eHow, or I think eHow's part of Demand Media, but they like went public and their whole entire business model was hiring people from third world countries and paying them pennies on the dollar to write 500 word articles. And they're just going for scale, right? Google's algorithms got smarter. Like if you keep gaming it, eventually they're going to get to it. It's not hard to like figure that out, right? And here's the thing. If you write a longer form post, if you check a tool like Ahrefs or SEMrush, you're going to find that a post ranks for not only a couple hundred keywords, but it can rank for a couple thousand keywords. And we've even started to take it, like diversify our revenue now, where we're like renting pages out on our site. Like we rank number one for podcast advertising, and we rented that out for a couple thousand dollars a month. So there's other creative things you can do once you hit that scale. You have the audience, you can use them to collect emails, and then you can retarget them. So many things you can do.
The debate we've kind of had internally is we've, you know, launched and kind of started working on our blog maybe 8 months ago, is do we write posts that we think will rank well but aren't that interesting to read? Let's say we're trying to rank for personalization tools. We had a post that was like 30 personalization tools that you should be looking at. And it's like, it's just kind of a list of, you know, the top 30 we kind of found. And it's like, I don't really want to read this. I might like browse it to like just look real quickly, but it's not interesting as opposed to like the step-by-step guide about how to personalize your site. It's like, okay, like, that's truly interesting to me.
Yeah.
What's kind of the balance there? Because we've struggled with that to say, okay, what are we trying to do? Are we trying to get ranked or are we trying to get readership?
Yeah.
And I guess Google wants those to be the same thing, but they're still not, right?
Yeah. This is huge, actually. I mean, it's good that we're at this conference because one of our mutual friends that was at the dinner last night, Syed, who runs Optin Monster, he's actually having a talk today, I believe, on success gaps. And success gaps, if you think about HubSpot, they get millions of visits a month, right? They rank for millions of keywords. And it's like, well, why do they write about Bitcoin? Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
It does?
No, it does make sense that they're at HubSpot's writing about Bitcoin.
HubSpot's a CRM. Why are they writing about Bitcoin? So, you know, what Syed said was like, it's the same thing for like what they're doing at Optin Monster. It's no longer about just writing about personalization. Like if I just sold plungers online, like I can't just write about plungers. I have to go like a level higher, right? What do I need to be successful with a plunger? Well, let's see. Maybe that's not a good example. Let's go with Syed's email tool, right? He's like, okay, guys, what does it take to be successful with Optin Monster? And they collect emails, right? So they're like, his team was like, oh, if the user signs up and starts paying for the tool, that is considered success. He's like, no, that's product activation. What do they need to be successful? They need a website. They need a fast website. They might need some SEO too. They might need, what are they using for hosting, right? Then that starts to give him ideas around other content and also channel partners too. And then you can go a level higher. Then you're not pigeonholed into just writing about personalization. Then the sky's the limit for the amount of content you can create. So that's one piece of it. And I think on our way up here, we were talking about repurposing too. Yeah. So I'm happy to talk about that.
Do you think people should start with like the keywords that are really close? Like again, if you're looking for personalization, you're about to buy, like that's what we want. Should you start there and then kind of like as you get that, like work your way up, or the opposite?
Debatable. I think one thing is if you create a lot of top of funnel content, you know, people are like, oh, content marketing doesn't work. But here's what happens. You're going to start attracting links to a lot of those pieces of content because they're going to start to rank, right? And then that gives you more domain authority across your entire site. And then that's going to allow your bottom of the funnel pages, personalization, comparison, reviews, use proof, alternatives, whatever. That's going to allow you to rank for those pages. Because we rank for like New York City SEO, San Francisco SEO right now. All this stuff, yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so then how do we build links? So we've written the post, good post, long form, about all sorts of stuff. Like, how do you build links?
The easy way, I'll give you the easy way right now. It's actually finding agencies. I'm not even just tooting my own horn here, but actually finding agencies that have, that do SEO, exhaust their link profile, move on to the next one. It's like cheating almost. But they have the inventory already. They've been doing this for years. You don't really want to build a sales team that's dedicated just for links because all they have to show at the end of the day are links. I don't think it's a good use of resources. I think they already have the process. You do that. Maybe you can hire those people eventually, bring them in-house.
Yep.
You're good to go.
What do you mean? So you use an agency's, you know, link profile. So, but they have 100 companies that they kind of always link to.
They have a link inventory already. They've like nailed this down, right? So you're leveraging that, and then you don't need to build anything on your own.
What's a link inventory?
So it's like the same, what you're saying, like they might have 100 publishers they go to all the time.
So they work with HubSpot all the time, and every time they get a new client, they can talk to the person at HubSpot.
But after 3-4 months, it starts, like they're repeating the same links. Oh,
yeah.
Time to goodbye. It sounds cutthroat, but it's practical.
Interesting. Okay. Very cool. Anything else that you guys are doing that you've seen that's working really well as far as like content and growing that way?
Yeah. So the content repurposing thing we were talking about, we're calling this the content sprouting technique. So actually Dave was like, yeah, well, you know, now it's like, how do we repurpose one blog post into other pieces? And for us, it's like this video can easily become five separate blog posts, long form. So you seed with this video, that's the seed, and then you sprout into, you know, different types of blog posts, and different types of videos perhaps. You can chop this up as well. You can make it into like, you know, 15 different social media posts. And then you just have like 40, 50 pieces of content from one piece. And so you seed, then you sprout, you pollinate to promote it. And then the last thing you said was?
Harvest, baby.
You harvest it, you monetize it.
Bring the combine in. So you're saying you can do all that with just one single grain.
One single grain. There you go.
There it is.
Bringing it all back together.
One single grain. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. As we started like producing more content, you know, you think of a really great idea and we have like a really great interview like this. It's like, I'm going to be like, we can do so much with this. I don't have to go track down the next person tomorrow. Like, this could fill us up for like a month of like new content everywhere.
Yep.
And it's, so much easier.
I'll tell you one thing we do too. We added this new meeting called Content Church. It's not like I'm religious, but on Wednesdays, we do this meeting where we just come up with new ideas. And then we basically vote on them, right? And we use these things called Fibonacci cards. And then, like, you might come up with different ideas.
One, three, five.
Yeah, 1, 3, 5, 21, eight, or whatever. And then we flip it over. It's, like, really fun, right? It's engaging, too, because you'll get, like, different perspectives. Like, we might say, oh, I might say one thing's, like, a 21, like, really hard to do. And one guy might say it's, like, a 1, like, really easy. So there's a discrepancy, and we can debate about it, right? Then it's not, like, there's a little more thought into it. Versus like, oh, I got this gut feeling.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah, we use that for, it's called Planning Poker. We use it for software points.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very cool. So let's shift into talking about podcasts. We're talking about content. Mm-hmm. So what are the two shows that you run? What kind of stats you've seen there?
Yeah.
And yeah, what are they?
So Growth Everywhere is the first one. That's the weekly entrepreneurial interviews. And I've also taken my YouTube lives and put those in from Tuesdays through Fridays. That one, again, been doing it for 5 years. It's been a struggle, and we can talk about that in the beginning. It's always a struggle for content, which is why I'm like, okay, dealing with all the like YouTube slowly growing and all that. But anyway, Marketing School been 2.5 years, and then Growth Everywhere is right now about $100,000 a month. And then Marketing School is about, we just broke 1 million downloads in a 30-day period. So that combined, I think we are at 22 million downloads overall.
That's amazing. 22 million downloads. Okay, so yes, so let's talk about the first one. Why do you say it was a struggle?
Yeah.
And you were just grinding away.
This struggle actually applies to any type of content. Like if you're ever thinking like you need to create a brand and it's just, you are going to go through this struggle, maybe not as hard, but you just got to learn how to persist through it. So hopefully this experience share helps. But after the first year, okay, so I was spending 6 hours a week on it. So I was interviewing the people, I was doing the show notes, I was publishing it, I was reaching out to people while I was trying to save Single Grain. So this is when I first joined Single Grain too. So there's an entire story behind that. Probably should have given up. After the first year, I was only getting 9 downloads per day. So the average podcast nowadays gets, you know, probably about 190 downloads. So I was slightly above average at the time, right? And after the second year, doing the same thing again, I was only getting 30 downloads a day. So the numbers told me, if I had any stakeholders at all, any partners, it would have been give up. If I had like, you know, a wife or any, give up, like, what are you doing, you idiot?
You were just so ignorant. That you could make it work.
Naive, yeah. Ignorant, naive. Be naive, be ignorant. As long as you feel like you're doing the right thing, as long as you feel like you're learning, maybe keep going.
Okay, so you're grinding away at that. Like, what actually clicked that actually made it start to grow? Or was there anything? Or was it just 6 years is a long time?
I'll tell you one thing that worked for us, right? Everyone's always looking for a silver bullet, but Product Hunt came out with a podcast section, and then we were just posting to it every day, and we just kept getting upvoted to the top. And we were getting better at getting our guests to promote. So they were like sharing it through you know, their socials, email, whatever. That was helpful. And then more and more people started talking about it. Cause like in the first year, people were like, I don't know why you're not getting more downloads, but this is like amazing. And so once people start saying that, it's not even like the qualitative, it's not the quantitative feedback because the numbers were bad. It's the qualitative feedback. Cause if people keep saying like, this is good, this is good, this is good, and you feel it's good, maybe that's a signal to keep going.
I feel like not many startups are doing podcasts, but it seems like the industry and the channel is growing a ton. But then you see Drift is doing a cool podcast, Segment just came out with one, we decided to launch one. Should startups be getting involved in this channel?
I think so, because like when I speak at conferences sometimes, like at the end during Q&A, people are like, I listen to you in the shower, or like, actually I've gotten that from a guy and a girl, I listen to you in the shower. Or like the sales cycles are a lot shorter for us. Like one guy said, I just listened to 60 of your episodes over the weekend. I'm just like, why don't I just reach out to this guy, right? Or like last week at Saster, I was telling you this, guy pointed at me, said podcast guy, and that led, that deal's worth like $500,000 to $600,000 now. It's just like, it builds so much goodwill, and it's easy because like even at TNC, the conference that we're at right now, people are like, oh, thank you so much for the podcast and everything. So I think it's worth it because the level of attention that your people are giving you is worth so much more because they have to be fully engaged. Whether they're like, you know, working out or cleaning the house or whatever, they're engaged on you, to you. Versus like if I'm watching Netflix, I might just take out my phone and start watching YouTube. Like, you know, my attention split.
Yeah, I feel like the results we've gotten have been a lot of just anecdotal. Like every day I meet someone who's heard Scale or Die. You know, we've got 10,000 downloads in the first month, which is cool for us. Mm-hmm. And, but it's not even that many, but it's like I've met so many of these different people.
It's a really good
start. Saying, hey, I listened to the thing. Cool show. I love it. You know, I'd love to chat sometime. It's like I'm assuming that's going to pay off, even though I don't have the like hard data right now to prove that out.
Long term, it will pay off. Yep.
Okay, so then you've got marketing school. Mm-hmm. What is marketing school and why is that one hotter than Growth Everywhere?
Okay, so marketing school, I do it with another well-known, not another, a well-known marketer. I'm not well-known. So his name's Neil Patel, and that one started off really strong because we started doing it every single day, right? So every single day, everyone's doing like these weekly ones, and we're like 30 days a month. And then we have not skipped one. Even when I'm sick, we do it. Even when he's sick, we do it. Wait, we meet up, we do it no matter what. We're relentless, right? And the first month, I think we broke like 100,000 downloads like quickly. It's also because we both hit our email list. I had more of an audience at the time. He already had an audience established. That definitely helps. Like if you have an email list, any type of audience at all, it is going to give you a big head start. But the fact that you're doing it every single day, it also like you're showing up in the feed every single day.
Yep.
And some people show up like, even come up to me with disdain sometimes, and they're like, you know, I had to unsubscribe because it was just too much content. Too much value.
Wait, do you guys get together and record a bunch? How do you do that?
So we record about 15 to 20 each time. Actually, Wednesday tomorrow, he's coming to my office. We're going to record, and we spend like 2 hours, probably like four to five hours a month recording.
Okay.
And we're usually ahead by 30 days.
How long are the episodes?
5 to 10 minutes.
And how do you come up with the topics?
On the spot.
Just whatever you want to talk about. So you'll just sit down tomorrow and just say what's interesting, what's exciting. Yeah.
And we just riff because he has so much knowledge and different perspective, and I have different perspective too. And there have been times where like we disagree with each other. And then like it's funny because later like he'll say something and I'll disagree, and it's like he'll prove me wrong or I'll prove him wrong later. So it's good. It's like validation because we're always getting proven wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how do you hear from your audience? That's something I've been trying to think about. It's like the feedback loop from podcasting is hard. I feel like there's this gap. You know, the Apple platform just creates this gap. Sometimes like some people come back to our site and like fill out our survey or give some feedback. I think I heard you doing that on one of yours. Mm-hmm. How do you actually hear from your audience about what they want to hear?
Yeah, so we actually have a topic suggestion. Like if you go to marketingschool.io, I think there's a suggest a topic, and it actually, they fill out a form and the topics come to us, and we'll put the suggestions in there, but most of the time Neil doesn't like the suggestions.
So he won't do it, even though they're saying, here's what we want to hear.
Yeah, a lot of times it's like, if we, it's like, he might feel good about it, or I might feel good about it, or like, sometimes we did have this one guy that was such a super fan that he was giving us like 20 ideas a week, and then he kind of like fell off. So yeah.
20 ideas a week. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you hear from that. Any other ways that you're actually like hearing?
The reviews help a lot, but to your point, there's definitely a delay. What we did was like singlegrain.com/survey. So we made like a pretty link, like a cloaked link. You can definitely do that too.
Yeah.
And like you just keep, maybe you do it for like a week or so or 2 weeks or so, or maybe like 14 episodes, and then you should be able to get that feedback.
Okay, look through a type form or survey and kind of say, here's who, okay, very cool. Any other tips you'd give for growing a podcast?
Yeah. You know, what's been helpful for us is that we've had a show notes person, meaning like every single episode we have, we will have the notes, like they'll write like, you know, 300 words or so, right? And what we'll do is we're actually having content writers expand that into like, you know, 1,500 words or so. And if it does really well, maybe 60 to 90 days into it, we'll expand that piece into like 2,000 to 3,000 words. So we're constantly like, we're seeding it again, right? And then we'll we'll sprout it, or maybe we'll water this one and then we'll harvest it after.
How do you know it's working well? What metrics are you looking at?
We're looking at the traffic to that page in Google Analytics.
Organic traffic, ranking. Mm-hmm. Okay.
If it's starting to rank for keywords, you use like Ahrefs, it's like, oh, wow, it's starting to rank for some good stuff. Let's sprout it. Or pollinate it. That's a pollinate.
Pollinate it. Yeah. All sorts of good metaphors there. All right, if you could only be on video or audio for the next decade, uh-huh. YouTube, whatever, versus audio, which do you choose?
Are starting from scratch?
Or just even you right now? Yeah, maybe both those.
Yeah, so I would do audio because I can just, like, do it without having to get ready. I can do it in my boxers, right?
Easier.
The whole attention thing. Like, you literally, like, if you have something in your earbuds or your headphones, like, you can't really do something else.
Yep.
So I think that's more valuable. Video is always going to get better and better, but, I would go with audio.
Video is still a lot harder. We got to have the cameras here. I just recorded our Founder Friday episode just 11 o'clock at my house. Kid was down. I had like a microphone on like a little like ice cream stand, which is like a little like kid's toy. And I'm just like, this is so ghetto, but like nobody knows. It creates great content.
Yeah. As long as the content's good.
Yeah, totally. The studio is like such a pain.
Yeah, right here. We got to get this view too.
By the way, this is a sweet view. If you're just listening to this, you're not watching, you're on YouTube, check this thing out. We're on the 45th floor.
Subscribe.
Oh yeah. And subscribe. This is a sweet view. Okay, cool. So let's kind of move into talking about your SaaS. Mm-hmm. You were helping all these SaaS companies, talking about this a ton. Why did you want to launch your own?
Yeah, so this is, again, one of those like things that just happened, right? I was at the Collision Conference in New Orleans, and I saw this guy make a post on Facebook in one of the groups that I never check, right? And he's like, I'm a technical guy, I had the CRM, had this e-commerce, and I'm like looking to do my next thing, right? I'm like, this is too good to be true. Like, this is like a CTO just like there in the wild. It's like a Pokemon, right?
Yeah, totally.
And so like we hit it off, like 13 people reached out to them. And then like, thankfully his wife was like, you got to work with this like Asian dude. He's like, thank you.
Why?
Because it looked like I was legit, right?
That's awesome.
So, so like we talk and I'm like, okay, why don't we do this? Like you have your ideas, I have my ideas, but I'm going to survey my audience with all the ideas and let's see what happens. And this idea stuck out from the rest. Like, so we could have made some sales tools, but we settled on ClickFlow because there's nothing out there. It's SEO A/B testing software, right? There are some competitors in the space right now, but man, like we have the audience, and then when you have the audience, you can plug whatever you want into it. It just makes sense, right? So your question was around why start it, right?
Yeah.
So we had the idea, we validated it with our audience already, and then we decided, look, we're committed to it. Let's give it a go, and we got started.
Very cool. And so what does ClickFlow do, and what was the audience saying that they wanted? So you knew that it was actually validated.
Yeah, so they wanted to be able to grow their organic traffic without building more content or links, right? So if you have like a couple hundred thousand visits a month, this is targeted towards mid-market to enterprise. If you just change your title and your meta description, you're gonna get a higher click-through rate, which means you're gonna get more traffic. So if you're like doing $100 million a year, making these changes could make like a seven-figure impact on your business. So it justifies paying like a six-figure price point for a simple tool like this.
Going through and it's testing different headlines or different, and then that goes through to Google, it actually swaps out, and then that could rank.
Yep.
Does it rank differently, or it's just the click-through is different?
The click-through rate, actually, Google has specified, it's like in really like light terms, that click-through rate does affect rankings. And it does make sense that it's a ranking signal, right?
Yeah.
And a lot of people have been doing this, but like so many people that use it right now, they've been doing this through Excel, like manually, and that just becomes too unruly. Our tool makes it a lot more, reporting's better, it's a lot more organized, it's just easier to run these tests.
Has it been easy or hard to launch fast?
It's been like what I expected. I mean, it's in the first year of business, we did about $108,000. We didn't raise any money at all. It's thankfully, it's because we had an audience, like what you're building right now with this audience, it becomes way easier. Again, it's like cheating. And so I would say there's a lot of learnings, right? You hear about all these things all the time, you listen to podcasts, but like, you don't really know until you go through it. I'm sure you've gone through the same thing with Proof.
Yep.
But like, we went through the struggle of like, we got this 1.0 version out, and then we realized that, sorry, you can beep that out. Crap.
You can say it. We're gonna have to put the little explicit box
the
next
beep.
To it.
Yeah. But it's like, damn, I think we're gonna need to rebuild it to build it for scale, make it a lot more stable. And so my CTO, co-founder, he's been head down the last couple of months just coding, and the new version just came out, and thankfully we're just going to this conference, and then like all these companies are so interested in it, are like, man, the stars are aligning right now, and it aligns perfectly because I'm hiring a CEO for SingleBrain so I can step out of the day-to-day.
You're gonna shift from 80% in the agency to 80%?
Yeah. Yeah, and then the 20% is like audience building.
Gotcha. Yeah. Very cool. And so what's kind of the growth strategy for ClickFlow then?
Yeah, so, you know, we already have a lot of connections. One thing I'm sure you've probably talked about on this podcast, but like customer advisory board, right? We got that from, we have like the
I don't think we've ever really talked about that. So explain your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so customer advisory board is like having people, we were talking to some really good SEOs. We're like, we wanted to get more feedback on the software, right? And thankfully, like, again, the audience, it makes it easier to connect with these people. So one guy from Vodafone, we connected with him. He's like, you know, have you done a customer advisory board? We're like, what is that? And he's like, well, you have like people from like companies like Vodafone, like other enterprise companies, maybe like Atlassian or whatever. And people that are really good at SEO that are influencers that speak on it, they can evangelize your software and they can also give you feedback on it. And you can just give them the software for free or whatever. And then also at the same time, they will, maybe you can throw like an event each year and get everyone together, right? That is so valuable. I'll do it all day. And that's the way we have like G2 Crowd, Vodafone, Atlassian on our customer advisory board. And it's been super helpful. And they'll make introductions. They'll speak about your tool to the right people. You're going to get so much value from it.
How did you set up that relationship? Are you asking like, hey, will you formally be on our customer advisory board?
Yeah. He sent me a template. I was like, so like, tell me about yours. He's like, oh yeah. So there's this and that. I was like, can you just send me a template? He's like, yes. And
then you sent me that template?
Absolutely. Just email me to remind me after.
All right. Yeah. We'll post a link to that maybe, you know, on the show notes here.
Sure.
Okay. So you ask these people and that's kind of been like, I guess the initial like testing incubator.
So he started giving feedback, right? He's like, you know, you got to focus on not just making this an SEO tool, but like think about business intelligence too. So meaning that SEO budgets are hard, like it's a much smaller budget, but you go business intelligence, much higher budgets, right? So we're like, then think about that. So there's so many insights that this guy's got that like we just don't know what we don't know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't even know if I answered your question.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And when do you kind of think you'll start to do paid traffic and start to like scale that? Like, what are you looking for in the company to be true before you start
going? I think we're gonna build a sales team and just do outreach with it. And then here's the thing. I don't know. You should definitely have the guys from like Segment. You had Segment on this podcast, right?
Yeah, we've got. I'm talking with Holly from Segment, who's the head of marketing there.
Yeah, Segment and even Hold.io.
Got Ed coming on here in a couple episodes.
Ed is so I met up with Ed at Saster, right? Guy's super smart, and the amount of traffic that we're getting. So you got the 240 a month to our site. That's so much data points already. You can just enrich all the data and then give all that data like the most qualified people that are using the right software. The right size, the right Alexa rank, all that, and just reach out to those people, right? Then what happens is it becomes a lot easier. You don't need to do cold outreach to everyone. These people have actually visited your site. So we're going to do that for all of the sites we have, whether it's Growth Everywhere, Marketing School, Single Grain, and ClickFlow.
Building a machine, man. This is awesome. It's like it's all coming together.
Yeah.
But you've been doing it for so long, you know? Yeah. It's not this overnight success. It's
that's the
opposite.
Yeah, it's like, this is what I was saying earlier, like, If I were to do it again, I would just focus on one thing and just grow it faster. I've been doing this thing where I've been split. Attention's been split. It's all been rising. And now it's finally starting to work. It's been like a 6-year journey to get here.
Yeah, people, you know, ask about proof. Like, how did we grow so fast out of the gate? And it's like, we have been solving the conversion rate optimization problem for customers for 5 years. It started as an agency and then selling courses and trainings and then the software. But it's like, we built up the knowledge. We built up the customer base. Like, we've been working on it. It wasn't this overnight success, even though it kind of looks like that.
That's what they say. They say, like with most SaaS products, like it doesn't really count until you get product market fit. So it might take you like 2, 3, 4, 5 years to get the product market fit, but that's when the clock really starts ticking.
Yep.
That's when it starts to like be like, oh, it might take you 7 years to get to 100 million or whatever, which, you know, I'm sure they talk about in Y Combinator.
Yeah, but it could be a long ramp up until that inflection point where things take off.
100%, yeah.
All right, man, let's wrap it up here. This has been amazing. I can't wait to kind of go take a nap and debrief on this stuff here later. But all right, we finish up with the Salty Six. Six rapid-fire questions.
Right.
You've never had a Salty Six before.
No, I don't. I guess I'm going to have a Salty Six.
You're about to have your first Salty Six.
All right.
It's a great experience.
All right.
Okay, so these are six rapid-fire questions for us to just get to know you better, hear a little more about your life, and just kind of, I'm kind of taking all the different answers from all the different guests. I'm going to compare them all here and kind of share that later with the audience here. Okay, so question number one, what do you do for fun?
What I do for fun? Wow. Well, here's the thing. Like, there's so many projects I have that I consider them all fun. I can always switch when I get bored. That's why I like working on multiple things.
What project are you enjoying the most right now?
I think it's I do think it's the agency because everyone talks about great culture, but I just love the team so much. It's look, Sujin's been on the podcast before. Like when I first took over, it was like his team that I inherited. And now, like, I failed so much that I dropped down to one employee that I was able to rebuild the team. the team that I put together. So I do feel a lot of affinity towards them.
How many people?
Yeah. 34 total. Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Do you have a morning routine? And if so, what is it?
Yeah. So usually I'm up at 5:30 or so. I'm trying to break this bad habit, but I'll look at the phone for like 30 minutes, like read the news and everything, and I'll go back to sleep for like an hour and I'll get back up. But sometimes I'm good about it where I do actually get up at 5:30 and then I actually go through the routine I want to go through. So it is meditation for 5 to 10 minutes, which everybody talks about. I do write in my morning journal, the 5-minute journal, which I love. I think I've been paying for it for like 4 or 5 years, so they've been making a lot of
kind of like a gym membership. It's like, even if I'm not writing in it, I can't cancel it.
Yep.
It's like, I just got to have it there.
100%. I use an Oura Ring, so I look at my sleep score from the last night, and then I'll go train in the morning, which usually just means like 20, 30 minutes of running, and then on the weekends, it's lifting at the gym. That's the morning routine. I don't eat breakfast.
How come you're not wearing the Oura Ring right now?
Because
I got mine on.
I don't like wearing stuff. Like, so I'll wear it to sleep and it's still annoying. Sometimes I punch myself too, so.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so it's just.
I guess an accident.
You just use it for sleep tracking. Mm-hmm. Okay, very cool. All right, how do you focus well during the day? You got a lot of stuff coming at you. How do you work?
Yeah, so the night before, I'll set like maybe like a top one, and then there's like maybe 2 things that fall below it. And then there's like a laundry list of like STDs, shit to do's, stuff to do.
We're already in the explicit zone.
All right.
It doesn't matter.
Stuff to do's.
At this point.
Stuff to do's. And, you know, that's. What I actually did recently, there's a guy, I mean, Sam Ovens, you know who he is. I think you've gone through his thing and because your video shows up.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, I watched his YouTube video. He has this thing called the War Map. And, like, I spent, like, before the end of the year, I set the War Map for the entire year. And just here's my priorities for each and every month. And I thought that to be, like, really useful. I think more people can adopt that. Then you're much more focused. Then, like, you have distractions coming everywhere. And I can say no to more things. And it's been pretty powerful.
That's awesome. Okay, what's a book that has impacted you deeply in the last few years? Personal, could be business.
I'll give you like the one that I read recently because I usually remember the most recent ones. Leadership and Self-Deception. So that one is about, it's from the Arbinger Institute, but like we're doing an EO retreat, entrepreneurs organization. And I'm literally hiring one of those people to be like a speaker at our retreat. But man, it just tells you so much. It's a good reminder on how you should be as a leader. And then there's so many situations where I'm like, man, I totally screwed up. And I highly recommend it.
Trying to get out of the box?
Trying to get out of the box.
That's the whole yeah. premise. I read that book probably eight years ago.
Yeah.
And it was really a big shift. I've seen people talking about it more and more. I think I saw Justin Kahn tweeting about it here.
Yeah, Stuart Butterfield from Slack.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah, great book. Okay, what's the best purchase you've made recently under $150?
Oh, I like how you gave it a $50 extra. You know what? I can't remember anything I bought recently. It's always books, right? Because I'm usually like listening to podcasts and I'll just auto order like, or not, I'll order like books when I'm like, you know, at the gym or whatever.
Yep.
What I can say though is these slip-ons are $99. So I'm going to order a new pair. So I'm about to buy them.
Yeah, no, I saw you repping those things. Those are fresh.
Yeah.
Fresh, the slip-ons.
I love them.
Have you worn the ones with laces too?
Yeah.
And you like the slip-ons more? Mm-hmm. I'm going to try that out.
There you go.
All right, number 6. What's a trait or characteristic that you have that has led to the success that you have today?
I mean, this is like the constant 300-400 interviews for Growth Everywhere. Any type of success I see is just like, it's not that anybody's like a genius or anything. It's just like persistence. You got to work on the right things, right? But it's persistence, honestly. It's the only reason that like things have worked. Yeah. Like, and I've gotten that through poker. Like I talk about how poker's been so important in my life, but like poker teaches you resilience. And like, I think that's a really good trait for people to have. Like, maybe go play poker for 3 to 6 months as an entrepreneur and then lose your shirt.
Poker. Wait, did you play a lot of poker before this? Like a professional poker player or anything?
I wasn't professional. I was making like $70,000 a year in college.
How do you make just at the casinos?
I was playing a lot.
Tournaments?
I was playing online. Yeah. I'll go to the casinos too.
Okay. And poker's just what? Persistent? You just kind of wait for the right hand and play that?
Not that. It's like you can bring your A game every single day, but you can lose for months at a time and sometimes even up to like years, even though you're bringing your A game. Even though you're the best at the table, you're dealing with variance, the numbers. Some things just don't go your way. And you got people gunning for you at the table, people, different attitudes, different egos. You just have to learn to deal with all of it. And then tilt is like when things aren't going your way, how do you react to all the trouble?
Yep.
And that's taught me to be like calm, more calmer in a lot of situations.
Yeah, yeah. Love it, man. Well, sounds good, Eric. Thanks so much for being on. If people want to find out more about you, check out the blog, podcast, where can they find you?
Yeah, so they can email me, Eric, E-R-I-C, at clickflow.com, or you can follow me on Instagram at Eric O, S as in sugar, I-U, at Eric O Sue. And yeah, happy to help, happy to connect.
All right, love it, man. Thanks for watching, guys. We'll see you in the next episode of Scale It or Die.